The Secrets of Doctor Who is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who, where we discuss everything about the hit BBC series Doctor Who. And today we're discussing the Ninth Doctor Big Finish audio story, The Butler Did It. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today on the panel are Father Corey Stika. Hey, Father Corey.
How's it going?
And Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
Folks, be sure to follow The Secrets of Doctor Who on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and your favorite podcast app, or on the StarQuest YouTube channel where you can watch us. And you should be sure to hit the bell to get notifications and, of course, subscribe. We do have a little bit of listener feedback at the end, so stick around for that. And I want to tell you about another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. A great new show called The Secrets of Sacred Art, which you can find wherever fine podcasts are found, or at sqpn.com/sacredart, and on our YouTube channel, because it is a video show, and you would really be missing something if you don't actually at least try the video version of it at least once.
Because it's Secrets of Sacred Art, not Secrets of Sacred Music or Secrets of Sacred Architecture.
Exactly. Actually, architecture is one of the
visual, yeah.
Yeah, most recent episodes. It's some really good episodes on architecture recently. All right, so I want to turn this over to Jimmy. Can you give us a recap of what happens in this story?
This week, the Ninth Doctor takes the TARDIS to a spaceship repair station, where he meets the staff that can be helpful or unhelpful. And then two of his friends arrive. They are the last two Diluvenoids, Sitka and Kiri, and they've traveled almost as much as the Doctor, so they've got lots of great stories. But as soon as they get there, one of them is seemingly poisoned, and the Doctor must figure out who the attempted murderer is. With the help of Myra, a trainee from the repair shop, he interviews all the people present. And eventually it's revealed that the criminal is the chief mechanic, a guy named Tiller. Turns out he's got a side job selling rare alien DNA, and he wants to kill the Doctor's friend so that the DNA of the last remaining Diluvenoid will be even more valuable. He also poisons Myra, the Doctor's assistant, but it turns out he isn't using poison. Instead, he's using nanobots, and the Doctor tricks him into revealing himself and then manages to stop the nanobots before they kill Myra and his friend Sita. The end.
Father Gray, your overall impression of this one?
Well, this is kind of fun. It was you know, an hour long or thereabouts, and it felt shorter than that. There wasn't, as you could tell by Jimmy's summary, there really wasn't a lot going on. It was a murder mystery, but it was, as it called out in the episode, a murder mystery in the style of Murder, She Wrote, if you remember that series with Angela Lansbury. Yep. Even mentioned the character Jessica Fletcher, so that was kind of fun. But it was all right. I mean, it was obviously it was an audio drama, and so they mentioned all these different races and all these different things going on. You had to basically picture it for yourself, but it was all right. It was fun.
How about you, Jimmy?
Yeah, I agree. For once, it isn't that long. I think this one's actually only like 45 minutes of runtime. Okay. But you know, they're modeling it off of roughly an hour. I mean, that's what a TV show is when you take out an hour long TV show, when you take out the commercials. It's okay. It's far from the best, you know, most brilliant Big Finish I've ever heard, but it's also not terrible. It's kind of in the middle, and you know, I like the idea of let's just do a murder mystery. You know, that in principle, I am all on board with that. It doesn't have to be weird sci-fi, whatever. You know, just let's do a murder mystery. That's okay. I'm totally on board with that. I just don't think this one was the most ingenious murder mystery. In fact, speaking of Murder, She Wrote, which I've been actually watching recently, they deliberately, you know, varied the types. Even though there's a murder in every episode, they varied the levels of complexity within that show. They deliberately had some that were easy murders to solve so the audience can figure it out along with Jessica Fletcher, Angela Lansbury. But then they also had harder ones where the reveal at the end would be a big surprise. And this is kind of on the easy side of things. It's not particularly inventive as a murder mystery goes. And I would say that's probably in part because the Big Finish writing staff is not used to writing murder mysteries. If they did, they could probably do something much more ingenious. But it's just a kind of basic murder mystery.
Spoilers, the butler did not do it.
Oh, no, they did. He did.
Valet, yeah.
Yeah, because they establish that the chief mechanic started working for the spaceship repair facility as a valet, which is on the career path to a butler. So at the end, the doctor has the line, the butler did do it.
That's true. I felt like, I'm agreeing with you guys, it wasn't the worst, wasn't the best. I felt like it was mainly, a lot of it seemed like, just designed to showcase the Ninth Doctor's quippiness, because he was very quippy in his TV run. And so there's a lot of self-deprecating humor, a lot of, puns and other fun things like that. So there was a lot of that. And I think in order to contrast his personality, they made nearly everyone else sour, cynical, world weary, abrupt, and it really created even more of a contrast with his personality. So I like the Ninth Doctor, and I enjoy his quippiness and that sort of thing. I'm always a fan of clever wordplay and fun dialogue. But yeah, the angriest, meanest guy turned out to be the killer. Surprise. it wasn't the most clever twist of all stories. So, I'm going to agree with you guys on that one.
I know what I would have done if I wanted to make it clever is I would have had – so the doctor's assistant in this is a temporary one-off companion named Myra, and she's a trainee at the spaceship facility. I'm not exactly sure what she's being trained for, but – she has – her current duties include routine first aid. Like she puts Band-Aids or plasters, as they say in Britain, on when people get cuts and stuff. And she's basically got a first aid kit, and that's it. And she's very humble. She's very shy. She's very insecure. She doesn't have self-confidence. And so the doctor picks her out early on and is trying to – talk her up and make something out of your life and have aspirations, because I can spot a diamond in the rough. And he says effectively. And so she assists him in the interrogations. And to my money, the best bit of that is where they're interviewing an alien that's called a Harganoi, that is on board his spaceship and has been on board his spaceship the entire time that the attempted murder was committed, because he can't breathe our atmosphere. And so the doctor apparently can't breathe it either. Humans can breathe it for a while, but they'll get like gastroenteritis for a week afterwards. And the doctor nominates Myra to go in and talk to him. So she's going to conduct the interview with the Harganoi, and the doctor's got an earpiece. So, you know, he can talk to her and kind of coach her through the interview process. And so she goes in, and he's told her she's already seen him interview several people, and he's been very blunt and flip with all of them. Mm-hmm. And which he's explained as part of his strategy for kind of knocking them off their balance and getting them to reveal stuff. So he tells her, you've got to be me in this interview. And she's like, Mrs. Not self-assured at all. So this is going to be a challenge for her. And in fact, she goes in and she's not doing a good job at first. And she keeps apologizing. And he's like, don't apologize. Sorry. And don't talk to the earpiece. He can't hear me, remember? And so finally she gets on track with a confident, aggressive interrogator personality talking to the Harganoi, and she starts to get rude with the Harganoi, you know, as the Ninth Doctor would. And the Harganoi says, I'm not putting up with this sort of rudeness. And Myra says, really, what sort of rudeness would you prefer? And in the earpiece, we hear the Doctor say, that was good. I'm stealing that one. And to my money, that's the best exchange in the whole short audio play. I just love that little exchange. But what I would do in order to make this more interesting as a murder mystery is it would turn out that the real killer is Myra. Mm-hmm. And the Doctor didn't pick a diamond in the rough. He picked the wrong person as his assistant. And that would make it a much more interesting murder mystery that would also reveal insights about the Doctor and his overconfidence.
Especially if they didn't like drop obvious clues all along the way of that Myra is the real killer. You know, that would, if it was a real twist at the end, you know, that would make it interesting. I agree. You know, you mentioned the different, you know, the people. I found it hard. Some of these stories, it's easy to keep track of who's who. I found it more difficult in this one to keep track of the different people on the station.
The
voices were similar.
Yeah, the voices were too similar, especially between the two male, the chief of security and the head mechanic.
Yeah.
They're very similar voices.
Part of the problem is, other than the Doctor, who's Christopher Eccleston, they've only got four credited actors on this thing. Mm-hmm. So you have the same actors doing multiple parts. And that, and they apply, like with the Harganoi, because he doesn't breathe our atmosphere, they apply a special effect to the voice to make it sound different. And they do a little bit of a special effect with the two Diluvenoid friends, Sita and Kiri. Mm-hmm. But it's still not enough. You've got too many other human characters running around, and it is hard to tell them apart.
Yeah. Relb sounds like Tiller, Myra and Larch sound similar. And it's just like, it was tough to kind of keep track. There were a couple other nice bits in there. Myra, when she first goes inside the TARDIS, we have, you know, the usual cliche of they see it's bigger on the inside, but she says it's inside out.
Yeah,
which I thought was a good one.
Yeah, that's the Doctor says one. That's a new one.
Yeah. A couple other things. The Doctor says his pockets are bigger on the inside. When he's trying to pay for the repairs to the TARDIS, he's, you know, he talks about his, like, where did you get all these currencies? I like also the fact that he has currencies from everywhere in his pockets. He has, you know, ancient Roman coins, and he has, that's kind of fun too. I like those little bits of world building they do.
I also liked at that moment where he's yanking all the stuff out of his pockets, and he says, when he's asked, he says they're bigger on the inside. They don't leave it there. He then says, shouldn't be, the fabric's really stretched. And that implies it's not Time Lord technology pockets.
Before that, when they ask him to pay for the repairs, he does say, oh, I forgot that some planets don't let you have everything for free.
And he mentions, oh, and I'm never going to be allowed back into that chip shop in Brighton or whatever.
I like the setting, this sort of like space garage that he goes to. The way they describe it, it feels kind of run down and out of the way. And I did like that bit. That was kind of fun.
Yeah. And everybody's just bitter. I mean, it's just, you know, nobody wants to do their job. You know, you've got the person who mans the front desk, who she just wants nothing to do with anybody calling, and just, you know, brusque and just not a pleasant person. You've got the head of security that's just, gruff. You've got the lead mechanic who's just a jerk. Everybody is just, except Myra, everybody is just kind of like unpleasant.
And yet they all, each individually thinks that the place could not run without them. Like everyone thinks they're the essential component of this operation, which is, I don't know about you guys, but I've worked in places like that. it's very funny, relatable.
Well, and it's interesting because once the lead mechanic is found out and apprehended, things change. Their attitudes all change dramatically. It turns out this guy is the one that was dragging everybody down. Mm. That's true. Everybody else is like, okay, we can make this work now and actually, you know, be productive, because when he wasn't there, people are actually able to do their jobs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of workplaces have that one guy who like mm-hmm. makes everybody work worse. That's interesting.
Incidentally, there's a structural feature we haven't commented on because it's so detached from the main plot. And that is the opening sequence to this mm-hmm. audio play. We hear a woman who's in a spaceship and she is talking to a guy over the radio and they're kind of flirting. But you get the sense it's playful flirting. They're not like really interested in each other. And she starts talking about, they start to veer into the sort of sexy telephone, what are you wearing thing? And mm-hmm. she starts describing her space suit. And then she starts talking about how hot it is. And he's thinking she's going too far with this gag. And she's like, no, it's really hot. And she becomes disoriented and her ship crashes. And what this is doing is it's setting us up for this is how the nanobot poisoning works. Mm-hmm. This is apparently a ship that has just left the space station, the repair station. And she was apparently poisoned with the nanobots while she was there. But it's so unconnected from the rest of the plot. Later on, we get a mention of this like once as a mysterious event that had happened that needs to be taken into account, but it's so brief. And it's like, I don't even think they establish the names of these characters. If they do, it's just in the opening sequence. And I think this is another writing flaw. If they're going to include a sequence like this to show us, you know, the red shirt dying, so we understand the stakes and what's going on, you know, and this is standard, like in a typical episode of the X-Files, you see your initial pre-opening credits victim who's going to get killed so we can see what the threat of the week does. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're doing here, but it's so disconnected. They needed to tie it in more to the subsequent action.
And when they did mention it, it was because it was a ship that the mechanic used for smuggling credits, I think it was. I can't remember. But it was something related to the mechanic and why he was doing the mm-hmm. poisoning with the nanobots.
Right. But yeah, you're right, Jimmy. Like it was so disconnected. I just kind of forgot about it. I mean, it's just like, well, you know, I kind of assumed we'll come back to that and we sort of only sideways did, like you mentioned. And I didn't even like record it in my notes here.
And then at the end, we have, so the doctor figures out how to deactivate the nanobots. So he saves Myra and Sita's lives. And then there's like an explosion that was going to go off and he stops that too. Mm-hmm. And I had a hard time following. So why is stuff going to explode here?
Because there's a bomb. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. And then they basically take the mechanic Tiller into custody and they just say they're going to turn him over to the authorities shortly.
Mm-hmm. Right. The doctor does have one line where he explains to, like, Myers, like, well, so what's your plan for figuring out what's going on? And he does say, it's kind of a nice summary of the doctor's method. So what's the plan? Some clever stuff, some not so clever stuff. In fact, some downright stupid stuff and a lot of improvising. That pretty much sums you up, doesn't it? I mean, now that I say it out loud.
Yeah. He also, because he's picked a diamond in the rough, now it turns out the Harganoi alien is a criminal. The one that Myra interviews, he is a criminal, but he's a thief. He's stolen a bunch of galactic credits, and he's got them in boxes on his ship. And so the doctor liberates some of the credits that the Harganoi liberated and uses them to basically pay for an education for Myra so she can go become a doctor and save lots of people.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so the nice ending. I speaking of Murder, She Wrote, the doctor, the reference he gives us, he says, the one who couldn't have done it did it. That's basic Murder, She Wrote logic, which is a nice. And then, as you say, he does mention Jessica Fletcher several times. So clearly the doctor is a Murder, She Wrote fan. He must have watched several episodes on the TARDIS. Also at the end, there is a moment where the two Diluvianoids basically tell the doctor it's safe to travel with companions again. So this is, you know, clearly just before he meets up with Rose Tyler. And so but it's the
after the war, after being the war right. doctor, where mm-hmm. he didn't have companions, at least not mm-hmm. televised ones.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, they're basically telling him what we often hear people tell the doctor is it's not good for you to be alone. You need companions on your journeying here. So I thought that was an interesting sort of hint of where, you know, where they kind of see the doctor going. And I'd be curious to see if Big Finish changes the fact of Rose Tyler being the Ninth Doctor's first companion.
Well, he's had temporary companions in the Ninth Doctor Chronicles. And by the way, I was checking recently. There are a lot of more Ninth Doctor plays than I thought there were. Mm-hmm. I thought they'd only come out with a few box sets. And no. There's like a couple of dozen of these, you know, nice. Plays. But I think they are sticking with Rose as his first big companion, although they could change that. You know, there's nothing that says that has to be the case. Mm. By the way, speaking of companions, at one point when Myra is pretending to be the doctor, and she even calls herself the doctor while she's doing that, the doctor on the headpiece then gets outed so that the Harganoi is aware of him and can hear him and demands to know who's speaking through this thing. And the doctor comes up with a name for himself. And instead of John Smith, he says Jamie Sullivan. And people have taken that as a reference to Second Doctor companion Jamie and Fourth Doctor companion Harry Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, I was trying on my, you know, as I was listening, I'm like, who's Jamie Sullivan? I know Jamie Sullivan. Who's Jamie Sullivan? But yeah, that could be. Any other notes on this, Father Corey?
So this was written by James Moran, who's written for Doctor Who quite a bit, actually Doctor Who and Torchwood. He wrote the 10th Doctor and Donna story, The Fires of Pompeii.
Oh, that was a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like I said, you go look at his list. He's got quite a few other stories he's been involved in with Big Finish and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Alternative media or the other media. Yeah. How about you, Jimmy? Any other notes?
Nah.
Okay, so we do have some feedback from our recent episode on the Second Doctor story, The Invasion, on YouTube. Paul Ewer writes, and I quote, "For God's sake, I and other fans are sick and tired of referring to Lethbridge Stewart as a Brigadier General. He is just a Brigadier. Also, the picture you used in the thumbnail is wrong. That's taken from the Web of Fear."
Okay, so Dom, you explain the thumbnail, and then I'll address the Brigadier issue.
And that is entirely my mistake. When I make the thumbnails, I Google Doctor Who and then the title of the episode, and that's one that came up. And I wasn't clear. It was a black and white photo of the Doctor and Lethbridge Stewart in a third person, and I didn't dig too deeply and assumed that was the one.
Okay.
So it worked.
In terms of the title Brigadier, yes, his official title is Brigadier, but I try to translate Britishisms for the American audience, and Americans don't know what a brigadier is. We don't use that term. We do a brigadier in the American military system is basically a one-star general. Mm-hmm. And so to clarify that for the audience, I sometimes will identify, I'll say Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart is a brigadier general, giving him his equivalent rank in the American military system, so that our primarily American audience will have a better grasp of how he fits into things. Because if you just said brigadier to an American, okay, that's some kind of officer maybe, but they don't know where it goes.
Mm-hmm. And it's entirely possible one of us will slip up at some point and just call him Brigadier General Lethbridge Stewart.
Especially those of us who were trained by the military that there's a rank called Brigadier General, and you know you respect that rank. And I mean, it is an equivalent. I mean, it is the same rank, because the next rank in the British Army is Major General, which is the same as here in the States. Yeah. Now we can start calling him Brigade Leader, as he was in Inferno, the Third Doctor story Inferno in the alternate universe.
Yeah. So we'll occasionally fall into Americanisms instead of British.
It's not even falling into them. I have consciously translated it for the audience.
Yeah, I mean, like when we're supposed to use the title, I'm not going to say lieutenant. I'll probably say lieutenant, that sort of thing when speaking of ranks.
So, well, because the proper pronunciation is lieutenant. I don't know why they called it lieutenant. There's no left in it.
There's no F in it. So anyway, thank you, Paul, for the feedback and correction and the opportunity to discuss, how we handle such things. All right. So now we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secrets of Doctor Who, including Thomas B., Denise F., Joe B., John H., and Jacob C. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secrets of Doctor Who and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And we'd also like to thank Simon Yannick, who edited this episode. So that's it from us. What did you think of the Ninth Doctor story, The Butler Did It? You can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com or the Secrets of Doctor Who Facebook page. Send an email to doctorwho@sqpn.com or visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/discord. Or you can watch The Secrets of Doctor Who on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. Leave a comment there. We'll be back next time when we'll be discussing the Eighth Doctor Big Finish story, Scherzo.
Scherzo.
I've only read them. Scherzo. Until then, Jimmy AP, thank you for joining me and sharing The Secrets of Doctor Who.
Thanks, Tom.
And Father Corey Stika, thank you as well.
Thank you, Tom.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who on StarQuest. Remember, you want guff? Don't bother asking me. Have a guff.